on the verge of making history Wednesday, within striking distance of becoming the first U.S. company valued over $1 trillion. Apple has been hovering near this record for months, but it was a strong earnings report for the third quarter and an upbeat outlook released Tuesday that propelled the stock over $200 for the first time.
The baobab has been transformed from a local staple in sub-Saharan countries like 31-year-old Yuhu's native Senegal to the latest superfood craze in the US and Europe, where the fruit's powdered pulp is mixed into smoothies. Industry group African Baobab Alliance says exports rose from 50 tons in 2013 to 450 in 2017 and are expected to reach 5,000 tons by 2025, making a $400 million industry.
The crown jewels of Sweden, stolen by thieves in broad daylight and then sped away from the crime scene in a speedboat. Not a spoof James Bond plot, but a reality on Tuesday when the royal artifacts were snatched from a cathedral an hour west from Stockholm.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It is August the 2nd, and it's 5:10 in the morning. We're glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. It is Thought Leader Thursday here on the program. That means our thought leader from Associated Bank will be here. Today it is Rod Murray. He is the group SVP for commercial banking and head of the leveraged finance group over at Associated Bank. We're going to have a good conversation today about interest rates and the economy and some other issues as well. And we'll bring in Rod momentarily. A little bit later in the program, we will talk a little bit about nutrition and diet, maybe adding a little bit more meditation to your menu, your food menu. We'll have a dietitian and nutritionist with us this morning. Judy Manisco will be here. That's in the second segment at around 5:40 this morning. But first, let's begin with the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are pointing toward opening losses when the bell rings later on Wall Street. Dow futures are off 168 points, more than a half a percent. NASDAQ futures are down more than three quarters of a percent, 54 points. And S&P futures are off more than a half a percent as well. Again, looks like a weak opening on Wall Street a little bit later this morning. Lots of weakness around the world as well. In London, markets are off by more than a percent, nearly 2% in Germany, nearly a percent in France. And in Asia this morning, the Nikkei off more than a percent, 234 points, and the Hang Seng off nearly 625 points, down more than 2%. The Shanghai is off 2% as well. Oil is trading this morning at $67.04, which is down about 62 cents. A couple of stories that we're watching for you. The former president of the nation's largest fuel retailer, convicted of defrauding customers of more than $23 million, is seeking to delay his sentencing, citing faulty math. Mark Hazelwood is set to be sentenced August 22nd for his part in a five-year fraud scheme that shorted trucking companies. Hazelwood's new defense team argues that they need three months to challenge that lawsuit. 5 months after Uber pulled its self-driving cars out of Arizona following a fatal crash, a Google spinoff Waymo is putting technology back on Phoenix streets in partnership with the city's transit system. Valley Metro, the agency that oversees Metro's Phoenix light rail and buses, had already been in talks with partnering with Waymo for several months before the crash last March that killed a pedestrian. Company's safety record is impeccable, but they are always trying to improve, according to Valley Metro CEO Scott Smith. Waymo announced in a blog post this week that a pilot program would launch allowing riders to hail an autonomous car to the nearest Valley Metro transit stop. Of course, this is an experiment that a lot of folks will be watching nationwide. And it is Thought Leader Thursday here on The Opening Bell. We do that every Thursday here with the new Thought Leader every week, talking about all kinds of things. Today we're going to talk a little bit about yesterday's decision by the Federal Reserve to leave interest rates unchanged and the economy. Rod Murray is here from Associated Bank. Rod is the group SVP for commercial banking and head of Leveraged Finance Group at Associated Bank. Rod, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Thanks. Good morning, Steve.
You're all smiles this morning. Like a lot of folks, you must be very happy with the way things are going with the economy right now.
Yeah, right now, you know, nothing to complain about on the present state. It's what's the future look like are the unknowns and the uncertain pieces.
What are people happy about right now?
Unemployment or lack thereof. Mm-hmm. GDP numbers were obviously strong. You still have some availability of credit that is in abundance. And, you know, in general, you know, there you can't find something that you can point to and say, gee, it's going to turn tomorrow. It's just tomorrow is tomorrow.
As we speak, the Federal Reserve decision has just been down. No new rate hike this time around, but they still say we're on track for one every couple months.
Right.
How will that impact things?
Well, I think that the markets have already built that in. You know, so unless there's a change in their either the verbiage that's behind the rate increases or something happens that they increase it by more or less than what the markets are currently predicting. Otherwise, I think that the yield curve has built that into both the market and the interest rate sensitivity and the pricing.
I bet you get to talk to some CEOs on occasion. What are they telling you about their long-range plans and their long-range concerns?
Sure. CEOs, CFOs, right, the C-suite, their long-range plans are that they are talking about spending more money. They are looking at M&A. They are looking at continuing to invest in their own businesses. That's really great. So those are the good pieces. Their concerns are the labor market, especially if they're serving the skilled and underskilled labor market, that there's a big shortage right now, you know, to find help because of what we just talked about. The unemployment rate is so low. Everybody that wants a job pretty much has one.
Are there any solutions for the rest of the crowd that may be out there that we could pull from for employment? Is it retraining? Are there other solutions that we can find to get more people working?
Yeah, there's been some interesting things in talking to your point, some of our clients is different things. One is you're seeing apprenticeship programs come back, and you're seeing, you know, them look hard at just their overall wage piece. And I mean, right? I mean, we all work for a reason, which is a living. So looking hard at what the wage is, the wage growth, you know, is one of the things we didn't touch on that hasn't grown at the pace that the GDP has. So those are some things that they're doing, be more creative. Something that we've seen that I think is also kind of brilliant is going back to the co-ops. I mean, think about, you know, you and I are close to the same age. Think about how popular the co-op system was before. You know, and again, invest in our young people and get them interested and get them skilled and looking for a skill at a younger age.
Yeah. Let's talk about a couple of topics that we've kind of been following. We've had conversations before here on the Thought Leader about fintechs, financial tech firms, financial technical firms, or the technology, financial technology. And this new report says that the Midwest is increasingly the place where they are coming to start up, to plant their seeds and grow. That's kind of exciting.
That is exciting, and you know, we'll touch on, there was an article just this week as well from the Treasury Department that is really going to kind of feed this in a little bit more. But yeah, in the Midwest, you know, there's a cost of living component that's down. You know, there's definitely a talent pool here in the Midwest. People are here and people want to be here. So the fact that it's coming in or they're starting it a little more is that's bullish. Where the issue is on the capital. That's what they need to do it. Yeah. And as we read in that article, you know, there's a plentiful venture capital, but 75% of it is centered in three states, you know, California, New York, and Massachusetts.
And we've heard, too, just outside of fintech, a lot of startups complaining about this, that the money in the Midwest doesn't seem to be as plentiful elsewhere. How does that change?
Well, you know, the Treasury Department, what they just released this week, that could change things. You know, we'll see. I think they released 80 recommendations, you know, some of which could help spur that, including some, you know, the ability to regulate or other things deregulate, you know, kind of calling it, I think the term that they used is creating a sandbox for these fintech startups. So that's a way it could change. It still could have some issues with the states on certain components of that, on what the states are going to fight it. But a few of these things, you know, of the 80, you know, what number of them go through, that might open up some capital and open up some, you know, growth in the fintech space.
The article we pulled this topic from was in AmericanBanker.com, and the story highlighted incubators, fintech incubators, are also helping to launch some of these companies. Techstar Chicago was one of the ones mentioned. And then they highlighted a couple of different cities. I mean, there's also one in South Bend, Indiana, but Des Moines, Kansas City, Missouri. I'm guessing that smaller towns, smaller Midwestern towns, perhaps Minneapolis is in that. So it's good for the Midwest.
It is good for the Midwest. You know, you what we forget living in Chicago and being Chicago here sometimes is, you know, there's a need for homes that aren't, you know, at the price that they are here and in the collar counties. And people need dollar amounts, you know, to buy a home of $50,000, $60,000 mm-hmm. or less. And where do you go for that? And these fintechs, you know, can create a more smooth position for it and availability of money at a price that it doesn't become as cost prohibitive if you have to go, you know, compete with the bigs.
Yeah, and I think the fintech you're talking about is called Hurry Home. Mm-hmm. It's a service that allows that puts renters on track to become homeowners. Boy, I wish that were around when I was renting, because it took a long time to save up the down payment to buy a house.
I didn't think we had to ever buy one.
Yeah. So companies like that are finding useful. What is the opportunity here for a bank like Associated?
Well, I think that the opportunity for banks are, you know, I'm going to tie it back to what the Treasury Department just put out. They're trying to allow some easing up to have banks partner with some of the fintech startups. And that's a good move, because you can't just ignore it. You have to, you know, it is easier maybe than starting from scratch to invest your own fintech if you have the entrepreneurs that have done it. So to banks like Associated, and you know, I know they talked about, you know, the big banks partnering up, but I think more the regional banks, mm-hmm. you know, like Associated and that size, can and should, you know, figure out ways to take advantage of partnering with them and investing in them as well.
Yeah, because you guys are in Wisconsin and Illinois. You've got a nice footprint on the whole Midwest there, the big parts of the Midwest.
Right, the original Big Ten world. Yeah.
When you talk about partnering, I know that we've had conversations before about banks buying some of these fintechs. Would partnering be something different than buying them? It would be actually working side by side, perhaps in some sort of partnership agreement, or how would that work?
Yeah, this is just, you know, my guess is that it could be one or the other. I think that the better thing would be to buy it, because you need, you know, you have to get it under your umbrella to bring it in from the regulatory. There's still all of your, you know your customer rules that are important. Know your client, know your customer, know your beneficiary. So I think that an acquisition makes more sense, but it doesn't mean that you couldn't figure out how to, you know, walk before you run in that space.
Yeah, and certainly if these incubators and others are sort of sowing these seeds and watering them like a nice garden, that it presents the future potential for mergers and acquisitions and other partnerships in the future with some of these companies.
Right. I mean, it can be a win-win for all the parties.
Yeah. And speaking of the Midwest, there's another report that talks about how the folks who are doing mergers and acquisitions, the folks with really deep pockets, have opted to start coming to the Midwest more often for some of these deals.
Yeah, I think that, you know, referred to as M&A rainmakers or merger and acquisition rainmakers, right? The big investment banks are coming. The boutiques have been here for a long time in the Chicago, in the heartland, in the Midwest, and doing well. But you're seeing more of the New York firms and San Francisco firms, et cetera, come here to get closer to their client. It makes sense. It doesn't mean that they weren't here before, but I think that there's just been more of a focus and some heavier hiring going on.
Are we talking about the firms like Goldman Sachs? Those,
right.
The bigger,
right? The Goldmans, the Goldmans of the world are the ones that are the bigger ones that have started coming into Chicago.
This obviously puts a lot of things at play in the Midwest. One of the cities, the two of the cities they talked about, Chicago and St. Louis. But what does this do for Associated?
Well, I think that to the extent that we can, you know, network with these, you know, companies and make sure that we're a known commodity, right? Just like they're coming in because there are deals here. Also, every bank is here in Chicago. It's one of the most overbanked cities in the United States, if not the most. Right. So it's just being a leader in the space and having the bank positioned, you know, to lend into it. You know, some of what they deal with are going to be really large dollar amount deals. You know, the boutiques are more who, you know, some of the regionals play with versus the, you know, the large. But, you know, certainly anywhere where opportunity knocks, you know, we're going to open the door.
I've always heard people when I ask them, why doesn't Chicago get the pub that other places get, that they say, well, we kind of keep our nose down. We try to stay off the radar because we don't want people coming in and crowding us out. That seems to be exactly what's happening here, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, they'll chase a little bit up market, but mm-hmm. you know, at some point, if the activity slows down, you're going to look at the entire market. So yeah, it could get a little bit overcrowded. I think that the more nimble you are, Chicago and the Midwest still is an area that is very, you know, look, the dollar rules, but at the same time, there's who are you, where are you, and what's the relationship, and what's the value that you add. So they'll have to cover both ends. It's not just, hey, I'm the biggest.
So if you have the rainmakers coming in, does it mean that there's rain to follow? I mean, are you hearing anything about some big Midwestern M&A activity coming or no?
Well, we've seen it for the last couple of years, actually. Certainly in our book, you know, we deal mostly in the middle market space, and we've seen a fair amount of it over the last 2 years, and still seeing a little bit of that. I don't think that the boat has been missed. You know, I think that there's still, you know, ripe activity. You know, I think that I know that I just read a couple of bank earnings calls from regionals and saying, right, they felt the same thing, that their loan growth might have stymied even though they're putting on new deals because their middle market C&I deals are getting, you know, kind of swallowed up by the big corporate activity. So there's still more to be had on that. The multiples are still strong. We talked about the availability of credit. You know, it's just when are the owners or the stockholders or shareholders of a given company looking to take money off the table or completely exit?
Yeah. We've also had conversations before about blockchain and some of these coin offerings and how this is moving into banking. I think it's finally happened in a big way. In China, the Agricultural Bank of China has issued a $300,000 loan using blockchain.
Yes, it's here. It sounds like a big loan, you know, for purposes of Agricultural Bank of China is the third largest bank in the world at $2.6 trillion. So that kind of gives you some scale of what that $300,000 loan is to them. However, it's here, you know, so they're probably the most aggressive country. I still think that the U.S. is going to be behind in that a little bit and not be as quick as China is. But here you go. It's out there and it's starting to happen.
$300,000 is the tip of a pin to this bank. That's just by design, right? I mean, because if it goes bad, obviously you don't want to lose a lot of money, but this is an experiment. It looks and sounds like an experiment.
It is, and they started experimenting a little bit, the ABC Bank in China, on some smaller, even unsecured deals. You know, this one is a little bit bigger. I don't think it specifically says who it's to, but the idea is to opening up where they are to, you know, to rural companies and, you know, large farmers, et cetera, to give them access to some capital that they otherwise wouldn't be able to get.
It's interesting, too, reading some of the details about how all this came about. It seems like at least parts of it look and feel like a regular loan. They used a piece of agricultural land as collateral. They had a regular, you know, you mentioned the farmer, the farm that they did. So those things sound like a normal loan. What is it you think that they're trying to do here that would be different?
It uses this distributed ledger, and it gets, right, we know it gets kind of complicated. I still don't completely understand it. But they use this distributed ledger to track, you know, the data, to track the collateral. And it also is a way to eliminate, you know, fraud. I mean, they talk about eliminating double pledging, et cetera. So those are the advantages to them.
What is it that you're looking for from these experiments? And you mentioned that it's not going to happen in America anytime soon. What would cause it to happen here? What are you looking for to see?
Well, we'll look to see what their success is. Does it go, you know, spread throughout that market first, Europe? And when I say it won't happen in the U.S. anytime soon, I mean, I don't see it in the next year or two, but who knows? I mean, some of the banks could start experimenting in a really small beta phase like this as well. So it'll look to what the success is. I still, right, my theme is always, do you have the gaps or the change around it to keep fraud out? And
right,
that's specifically what they say the advantage is, you know, but the proof will be in the pudding on that. Does it really work? And is it something that's sustainable from keeping the hackers out of?
Yeah.
And that's what their whole idea is. So we'll see how it goes.
And does a bank have that infrastructure to even do this? I mean, like if you wanted to at Associated Bank right now, could you do a blockchain loan? Could you even?
No.
Yeah.
No, and I mean, from several standpoints, right? The technology, the regulatory side of things. How do you monitor it? How do you build it? How do you administer it, right?
Rod, always good chatting with you. We'll see you again next time.
All right, sounds great. Thanks, Steve.
Rod Murray is the Group SVP for Commercial Banking and the head of the Leverage Finance Group at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. We do it every Thursday here on The Opening Bell. Remember, you can listen to our past conversations at WGNradio.com on the Opening Bell page. Follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter. And you can head over to their website, too, associatedbank.com/thoughtleadership, to meet more of our thought leaders and hear more conversations there as well.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio. A rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. A U.S. jury awarded IBM $82.5 million after finding that Groupon infringed upon its e-commerce patents. IBM has accused Groupon of building its online coupon business on the back of the IBM e-commerce inventions without permission. Lyft is paying drivers in Chicago to ditch their cars for a month. Lyft said it will give 100 Chicago residents $550 in Lyft and other transit credits like Divvy and the CTA if they don't drive their personal cars for a month. The gimmick is meant to show cheaper transportation alternatives to owning a vehicle. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us in our Thursday edition. If your morning commute takes forever and makes you nervous on a daily basis, it might be time to make a few changes in your routine that could help you be a little healthier, and perhaps it's what you're eating. Joining us this morning, Judy Manisco, a licensed nutritionist and dietitian at Gem Nutrition out in the suburbs. Judy, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve.
We saw this article in the Tribune and wanted to bring it to folks because it makes a lot of sense. If you have a frazzled commute to or from work, it could be just a couple of little things that might help you deal with it better. I know the article talked about meditation and having positive thoughts, but food might be able to help too. It may be something in your diet that you could change to make you feel a little bit more healthier. Is it that easy?
Yes, it is. It is. I have a commute. I have two offices. One of them is right down there on Michigan Avenue and Oak Street, and the other is in Deerfield. I live 5 minutes from the Deerfield office, but sometimes it takes me about an hour and 45 minutes to reach the Michigan Avenue location. So I thought to myself, what can I do to make this better? And for everyone else, number one is to make sure you get up early enough or the day before, prepare what you need for what you're going to have in the morning. And then I thought, well, I'm going to be sitting in the car for an hour and a half. I don't want to have this heavy lump in my stomach. So I put together this protein drink. Would you like me to explain what's in it?
Absolutely.
Okay. So what I do, what I've done for me is I take some organic it's actually a mixture of a balance of protein and carbohydrates to keep me full and energized until lunch, because when I reach my office, I usually have like maybe a 10-minute setup for a patient to come in, and then I can be consulting 3 hours in a row, so I want to make sure that I'm full. So what I do usually is I mix some organic soy milk. I put in some raw unsalted walnuts because they're high in nutrient dense and omega-3s. And the omega-3s are very good for the brain. I put in a variety of seeds like chia seed and flax seed. And then I throw in some oat bran just to keep me full for the fiber content. And then either a stalk of celery or a handful of spinach because I want the energizing of the greens, which is also good for brain flow and just to make your brain sharp. And then when I recommend this to patients, I am not a sweet person. I don't like any sweets in the morning, but some people do like to have something sweet, so I will tell them to maybe put in like a half a banana or a date or some cocoa and just kind of adjust it. And then I mix that up in like a Vitamix or a blender, and I usually drink it like maybe 15 to 20 minutes before I leave, and then I get in my car.
So you don't take it with you then, so that you're focusing solely on driving and commuting into work. Is that part of it as well?
Yeah, what I do is I usually don't take it with me because the oat bran kind of expands and the flaxseed expands and the chia, and it can get a little thick. And then when I'm on the highway, when I'm traveling the 294, the Kennedy, it's really sometimes bumper to bumper that I want to really focus on looking forward. So I really don't even want to look down for a moment to do anything like that. So I'm not like a very big advocate of drinking and eating in the car. Because it depends on the situation, but because I'm in such close traffic, I like to really focus on the road. I'm sure the Tollway Association will love me now.
Yeah, and the Illinois State Police as well. I remember once when I was a younger person, I was pulled over in the morning on my way to work. And I had a little bit of breakfast, I think, from a fast food place because I was running late.
And I just I remember the state trooper telling me, Steve, it's not state police policy to eat and drive. And ever since then, I've stopped doing that. But, Julie, let me ask you about, let's say you're in a hurry and you don't have time to do the shake. What would be another alternative?
Oh, okay. Well, maybe boil some hard-boiled eggs ahead of time. Do that, like maybe the night before, day before when you're home and you have some free time. You could do that or grab a one or two mozzarella sticks because I'm looking for the protein now. Maybe some yogurt. Grab a plain yogurt, throw some berries in there. That would be okay, too. And that will keep you going, too. I think that's kind of a quick, you know, quick grab and grab. There's also protein drinks that you can buy. Like I have a couple companies I work with and recommend for my patients where they're powders and they just kind of mix two scoops with water. And then as their last 15 minutes of getting ready, they can just kind of sip. Do that too. And I have done that on a real busy day. And I've just had maybe the protein drink too, like the one that's already there. But most of the time I make up my own drink. But if there's been a change in schedule and the patient wants to come in earlier and I have to kind of get out of the house a little quicker, I'll mix my two scoops in water and then I'll drink that. And it's a good brand, the two brands I work with, because they have a good protein carbohydrate source and it keeps me full.
Yeah, I like the hard-boiled egg idea that you could do that in advance. You could have those in the refrigerator ready to go every day, something you could prepare in advance. One of the other things I saw that kind of concerns me a little, because I love my coffee, and and at least in my mind, I don't think I could survive without it, but you recommend against having coffee. You're not a big caffeine person.
Well, personally, I'm not a big caffeine person. I just never was. It's just not my thing. But I recommend if you're going to have coffee, make sure that you have that sound breakfast that we talked about, the protein and carbs. And then maybe have the coffee mid-morning and don't have as much. Because what I'm finding when I'm counseling, a couple things are going on. When a patient has coffee, they're losing their appetite. And they're not eating anything till maybe 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And then they come to me and they say, why can't I lose weight? What's going on? A lot of patients are coming to me now in the age of the 20s and the 30s, even the 40s. And they're very anxious and they're very depressed. And when I remove coffee from their diet for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, they find they feel better. They're sleeping better. A lot of patients are coming to me with sleep disturbances. So when I look at not even just coffee, but they're consuming a lot of chocolate. So I actually ask them to take a look at their sensitivity levels and maybe have something sound in their stomach to begin with and then have that coffee mid-morning and not as much. And if you really want to wean away from coffee, try like white tea or green tea. If you're looking for something warm in the winter, fall, you can heat that up.
And I'm guessing, too, that the white knuckles that some of us have on the way to work and on the way home, that caffeine would only make that even worse.
Exactly right. You want to relax. You want to have something that's, you know, not stimulating your central nervous system. It's just you're slowly easing into the traffic, something not too heavy in your stomach. Sometimes coffee could be like a brick in your stomach if you're getting something with a lot of, you know, cream in it and all of that. And exactly right about that. You want to get energy from your own source because the coffee is just going to stress you out more, and especially if you're in bumper to bumper. Now, I don't want coffee companies to be calling me up saying, what are you doing? You just kind of have to evaluate and look at what you're doing, caffeine sensitivity you have.
You know, we've been talking here about breakfast, too, but I'm guessing there are things that you can do through the entire routine of your days with food that can make you a healthier for all kinds of situations. What would be your top advice?
I would say a crucial time is usually between lunch and dinner, and I usually recommend a mid-afternoon snack, which would be something like the hard-boiled eggs or yogurt or a mozzarella stick or two or another protein drink so that you have something on the ride home that you don't grab something, again, that might be overstimulating and, you know, you have that same traffic you're coming home in, except it's worse now. You're tired. Everybody's tired. In the morning, everybody's a little more rested. So have something, again, maybe another protein drink in between that. So when I work with patients, I tell them to have protein, you know, have breakfast, lunch, and a mid-morning snack, a snack between lunch and dinner to get them on the ride home. So when they come home, they're not so famished where they just start grabbing and not even knowing what they're grabbing anymore.
Judy, what else are you seeing with folks? I know that we've been battling our waistlines forever, but are people cheating in ways that you've not seen before? Are you seeing people doing better at this, or what would be the state of things?
Well, I think things are getting worse because portion sizes are way too big, and the portion sizes now are three times the size of the 1960s and 1950s and 1970s. So I think people are really gaining too much weight, and it's causing a big health crisis going on from head to toe. And a lot of people just don't know. They don't know about little tips like this. They don't know that their portion size is too big. They just need to be more educated on all this. And they're very thankful, and they're very happy that they're learning all of this. But there is definitely something going on here. I just have to look around when I'm out. I'm very observant of what I see, and I see there's definitely a problem.
We'll direct people to your web site, gemnutritionservices.com. That's J-E-M. I've seen quite a bit of results here on your page, folks losing more than 100 pounds. That's a lot of pounds.
Yeah, 125, and it was a male patient.
Yeah, nice. Well, Judy, we appreciate you being with us this morning. Thanks for the health advice.
You're very welcome. You have a wonderful day.
You too. Judy Menisco, a licensed nutritionist and dietitian. It's GEM Nutrition, J-E-M Nutrition. And again, the website is gemnutritionservices.com. And she's in Chicago and Deerfield.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, sizable losses expected at the open on Wall Street. Trade concerns back in the front and center. After a rough day overseas overnight, still happening in Europe, markets are lower there by 1% or more, in some cases pushing as high as 2%. In Asia, futures again off by about 179 on the Dow, down about 56 on the NASDAQ, and down about 18 on the S&P. Now, commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Live cattle futures up over 1% yesterday. And feeder cattle prices leading the way higher after corn futures fell. The relationship there, of course, corn, a major feed cost for feeding cattle, and feeder cattle surged as corn futures turned lower from a roughly 1.5 month high. September feeder cattle ended the day up $2.37 at $151.95, and October live cattle finished 97 cents higher at $110.27 a hundredweight. Then turning to the grain market, yesterday again with the September wheat contract up 5.5 cents. September corn, though, was down 6.5. And August soybeans down 17 and a quarter cents a bushel. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, August the 2nd. Freddie Mac releases its report on weekly mortgage rates today. Also, the Commerce Department releases factory orders numbers for June. Also today, the Challenger job cut report. We'll get a look at initial jobless claims, factory orders, as I mentioned. The EIA natural gas report is also due out. A couple of big companies with earnings today include Berkshire Hathaway, Yum Brands, Aetna, and Blue Apron. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, August the 2nd.